Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Tina Horn, and this is Interrobang. Interrobang is the bonus segment of my Wire People Into That podcast. Follow at Tina Horn Sass or at Tina Horn's Ass, if you're nasty, on Twitter and Instagram. Visit wirepeopleintothat.com. Support my show and get extra shit at patreon.com/TinaHorn. That's patreon.com/TinaHorn.
And I'm so excited to be here.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, it's great to have you on my couch.
Yes, thank you for having me over to your couch. It's nice. I tend to have people over to my couch in New York, but here we are in sunny LA, and you have a very nice black leather couch, which I would have expected nothing less.
I do. I fall asleep on this couch sometimes.
I can imagine why, just being like enveloped by black leather.
Yeah, while watching really smart TV.
Like what, for example?
Well, like Westworld.
Oh, yeah.
The OA.
Oh, God. There's so much. I really love both of those shows.
Good. Yeah. I can't believe we haven't talked about that yet.
Well, we can. Yeah, we can, certainly can. Go
cool.
On.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm obsessed with Westworld.
Cool. Yeah, I wrote a few pieces.
Oh, you did?
About Westworld. Yeah, I'm going to send them to you. Yeah. It was actually funny. I don't know what inspired me, but I started to become really obsessed with the idea of artificially intelligent sex workers, and like and like pitched an essay about it to a few people, and they were like, I don't know, there's nothing interesting there.
Oh, that's like, so weird you should say that, because I wrote this article on FinDom and it's a way longer piece than got published, of course. Yeah. Big surprise.
Yeah.
But the main one of the things that I wrote that surprised me was that, you know, where is the robot FinDom? Where is just like these artificially these preconceived responses to strangers and customers. And it's just a conversation that's already planned, and that you just push a button and the responses are there, because isn't it all on a computer anyway?
Yeah. So you mean, so where's the financial domination?
Like a self-driving car. Where's the self-driving FinDom?
Well, I mean, I'm just thinking about like slot machines.
Yeah. Think about slot machines.
I mean,
they're so sad though. It's like botulism for the soul.
Oh my God. Really true.
It's such a sad place.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, my grandparents lived in Vegas when I was growing up.
Oh my God, I'm sorry.
No, well, I mean,
there's something so yellow and cancery about Vegas, just energetically.
I mean, you know, bless my grandparents, RIP. They were wonderful, and like time with them was wonderful, but frequently visiting, and you know, I grew up in California, so it was quite easy for us to get to Vegas, and it made me really immune to to a desire to gamble.
Oh, like that is good then.
I'm like very, I find,
you're
gambling,
repulsed by it.
I'm like really repulsed by gambling.
And I think that's a healthy response to something that's completely soul-sucking and weird and intrinsically sad.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the pot thing. Like, I grew up in Humboldt, so like pot is just like, it's the wallpaper.
Right.
Like, why would I do something that makes me feel fat and sad and dumb? and something that my brother has been doing since before I was born. Like, it just is too, it's there. It's like in my DNA.
Yeah.
Like hating Los Angeles.
Right. And yet here you are.
And yet here I am.
And you've been here for a while.
It's self-hatred. I can't help it. I know. I've been here for a while. We were talking about this being both, it's an, also in our DNA to despise Los Angeles. But what I was talking to this writer the other day about how San Francisco is a place for like writers and sex workers and thinkers to sort of be loved and be enveloped in this opiate like rainy, beautiful, creative environment.
Yeah.
But LA is a sprawling suburb that wants you dead. And yet so much beautiful TV and voices are here, you know? What about that?
Yeah, sunshine is nice.
It is, but it's oppressive. I'm kind of like of the Joan Didion migraine school of sunshine.
Gotcha. Oh my God, I love that essay, the Joan Didion essay about migraines.
I love it too. It's, and really, it's totally true.
I feel like it's really relevant also to lots of different mental health stuff. Yeah. And I like recommend it to folks who are struggling with that thing where people are like, why don't you just take an Advil? Like,
because you're puking for 8 hours on the ground.
Yeah. Yeah.
And having hallucinations. Yeah.
Exactly. And not the fun kind.
And not the fun kind. But back to like this robot sex worker
idea.
Like, I mean, I think that, I mean, also Westworld is about like memory and what is memory.
Yes.
And, like, that's such a huge part of my kind of writing life and my memoir nonfiction classes about, we address kind of, we look in the bloody eye, like, what is memory and like, how is it formed? And what is the territory of that? And I love the sex workers, of course, in Westworld.
Yeah, yeah.
They're really powerful. Especially and interesting.
Tandy Newton, like, woman of color, madam character.
Maeve.
Like, and yeah,
Maeve?
Right. Maeve. Yeah, and the fact that she is also the person who discerns what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, and does something about it.
Yeah.
Feels like a very interesting madam role.
Very interesting. And of course I love Rachel Wood.
Yeah.
As Rachel, well.
Yeah. Evan Rachel Wood.
Wood.
Yeah. She's very good.
She's so good. And so just the melancholy. I've been reading I've been like interested in this idea of David Foster Wallace's Against Irony. Video about and I find her character so melancholic and so sincere about like sadness and romance, and I love her character. It's the perfect character.
Agreed.
But as far as like, I wanted, before we get too in depth about TV shows and all of that, I mean, about the sex worker voices, I wanted to, if it's okay with you, kind of talk about like the savage, interesting, fringe sex worker voices that I'm really excited by right now.
Please do.
Well, I love Jack the Stripper.
Also.
And I know I listened to the podcast on
good.
Jack the Stripper. Yeah.
She is just as amazing a person as she is a creative force. And
so important.
Yeah. It seems like sort of pat to say, oh, someone is using humor.
She's so nice.
Yeah, or like so funny. But I think that
she's really talented.
I think that
on a lot of levels.
Yeah, she has made an art of humor that is actually quite rare.
I find it refreshing. I like her sense of play.
Yeah.
I like her good naturedness.
Totally.
There's a lack of hostility.
Totally.
But, you know, I'm a huge fan of like the savage kind of barely palatable voices. Like, it's just
you were just telling me you studied. You studied under Kathy Acker
and Avital Ranel and Hubert Selby Jr. And I gave my like senior lecture on Hubert Selby Jr. and like band literature. So I think that Jane Starr is an exciting new voice.
Yeah,
and I think that
really
she's
amazing.
Kind of like the trans woman version of Hubert Selby Jr.
Amazing.
And and it's just savage and it just tears you up, you know.
Yeah.
And I love Melissa Phoebos. Obviously.
Totally.
I love Charlotte Shane. Have you read Prostitute Laundry?
I have. And Charlotte and I are friends, and
she's wonderful and
come
eloquent.
On the show. And yeah.
And I love her. I love the form in which she works.
Totally.
And it's kind of this, she does a really nice tight wire with something that feels very civilized, but at the same time, it feels very heartbreaking. And
totally.
I love that tight rope that she walks. I love Kat Marnell. Have you read her memoir yet?
I haven't.
How to Murder
read
Your
it.
Life.
I haven't.
Now, I'm not saying she's a sex worker, but I think she's too rich to actually need to be a sex worker. Mm. I think she wishes she was one. That's kind of why I sort of dismissed her, but you cannot deny her voice. Mm-hmm. It is so savage and dark. And I write about addiction, and I think you probably know I'm in recovery a million years.
Yeah.
But there's nothing like that self-hatred, that like horrible, savage pain of that she feels, and it is so beautiful, and I love her voice. I fucking want to cast her. Like, I, she probably wouldn't, but
I don't know.
I don't know. But I want her to be in one of my shows just because she's so just brutal and beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, she's sort of returned from a little bit of obscurity with this book. So now might be the best time.
Have you read How to Murder Your Life?
No, I haven't read it yet.
Okay. Me neither.
Yeah.
I ordered it.
Cool.
But I mean, her columns and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Amphetamine Logic is just brutal.
Yeah.
And
on
beautiful.
Vice, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And who else do I love? Oh, I love Bruce Benderson.
I don't think
Have you read The Romanian?
No.
It's my favorite memoir on male prostitution.
Cool.
And falling in love with a whore and what that is about and his complicated lens. He's so smart and so brilliant and such a helpful, beautiful man.
Cool.
So Bruce Benderson, The Romanian, is absolutely beautiful.
Oh, that is a gorgeous looking book. Not that so, you can judge a book by it.
I know. And then Lizzie Borden, Working Girls. And I'm working with her on a project right now. So I love her voice as well.
Oh, I love that.
It's eloquent.
Thank you for speaking to all of the sex work writers that you love. That is really fucking cool.
It's important.
Yeah.
Is lonely.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Lovers are cold on the phone. The mood out in the hall ain't fantastic. Air feels static, not dramatic.
We should talk about your sex work voice.
Okay, let's talk about it.
You have a memoir called Spent, which I love.
Thank you.
And you're doing a lot of, sounds like a lot of TV and film work now.
Writing. Well, yes and no. I mean, someone forgot to tell my bank account.
Right.
But
right,
I am, right. You know, trying to do a lot of work for TV and film. I have a feature film that I co-wrote with Silas Howard, who's amazing.
Yes, he is amazing.
He's just a rocket ship taking off, and it's been a joyful and fun experience collaborating with Silas Howard and L.A. Teodosio.
Yes.
And
what is that movie about?
Okay, so we wrote a movie called The Lusty. It is a fictionalized movie based on a true story of the unionized strip club, SEIU Local 790, the Exotic Dancers Alliance. It was a labor war we fought. I literally tried to kill myself getting off of meth in 1995, and with bandaged wrist walked into the Lusty Lady looking for a job because I was out of money and I was moonlighting during the day. I was working at Wasteland selling my t-shirts for a burrito next door to live and walking to AA meetings. And I walked into the Lusty for a job, and what happened was it just ended up being like this, like, startlingly intelligent women who had savings accounts and cats and skateboards and like these fire breathing, like tattooed single mothers, teachers. And they just were startlingly intelligent, slumber party atmosphere.
Oh,
and they gave me the side eye, like, who's this crazy punk girl walking in off the streets? Like, who let her get hired, basically?
Yeah.
And we were being filmed.
Right.
And there were
by customers. Yeah.
They were coming in and filming us, and a girl who was 19 just said, you know, I'm going to change things around here.
Yeah.
And I was there when it happened, and it happened multiple times, and management refused to listen. And there were some racist policies also.
Right.
Which were very, shitty.
Yeah.
And some body,
body
discrimination.
Shaming. Yeah. Yeah.
Shaming.
Yeah.
And, we wanted to change that.
And you fucking did?
We did. It took us 2 years.
Yeah.
One of the girls that was one of the main unionizers became a lawyer. She is now a union lawyer.
Hell
Another
yes.
one is a weed farmer. who's still like, you know, lives life on her own terms and is just that person.
Yeah.
But these were our friends, you know, and we fought it together. One girl died in a car accident, unfortunately, randomly. And another woman is a PhD professor. And, we're all still in touch. Well, so that's what the movie is about.
I mean, the Lusty Lady is the stuff of legends. And like, it is. Even, you know, I mean, I auditioned there in 2005.
I was long gone by then.
Yeah. And
I was here by then.
In LA.
LA, yeah.
And I wasn't hired. I don't think I was confident enough. I was 24. But that led me, to starting to get into East Bay, BDSM, which ended being my orientation.
Orientation. That's a new one. I love it.
And, but the existence of the Lusty, well, you know, and the place, you know, the gates that I ended up and, you know, a lot of the other spaces that I ended up had that similar thing that you're talking about, the combination of slumber party support with intelligence and commitment to being able to do that work in an environment that like mitigated for as much risk as possible.
Yeah.
The Lusty Lady, I think, just became sort of the gold standard for people that we knew that we could expect to be treated well.
Absolutely.
Because of the work that you and everybody at the Lusty did.
Well, and the huge difference here, and I think, people talk about the hierarchy.
Right.
But what made it kind of like this kind of middle class environment that was very definitely a different than the street prostitute vibe of other clubs I spent a lot of time lap dancing in later. But it was because you're behind glass, there's no direct contact with the customers.
Yeah.
It's contact with each other.
Right.
And so, you know, and again, like back to the movie, like the movie is sort of, we wanted it to be about characters, not just the plot. Because I have all of the information about the union because I was there. Like I have all of the writing, all of the articles, everything.
Yeah.
But it's like you have to fall in love with the characters.
Totally.
And who they are to one another.
Yeah.
And the thing that we were looking for at that time, you know, because it was the end of the AIDS era and we had just suffered a massive loss of our friends from AIDS.
Because also so many of the women doing sex work at that time and continuing are queer women.
Queer women.
Yeah.
And allies.
Yeah.
And, with fluid sexualities before we really had labels for that stuff back then or the drugs that people have today.
Yeah.
So we were in this pre-Burning Man, pre-tech world, suffering from loss and doing sex work and banding together and doing sex shows. And so we were activists. We came through a lot of Food Not Bombs and SF ACT UP direct activism.
Yeah.
And those things were kind of falling flat.
Yeah.
And so what happened was we were just kind of a small enough group and just sort of a vocal enough group and just badass enough to like make something happen. And I remember there were moments where I was like, we could actually change shit around here.
Yeah.
Like this is our deal. Like we could actually, what do we have to lose?
So how do you feel about the fact that the Lusty Lady is now closed?
Well, they lost their lease. San Francisco is just impossible.
Yeah.
Money wise to live there. It's just a very
and work there.
Rich and it feels very bougie.
Yeah.
It feels like impossible to live there. I don't know how people do it.
And also that those gentrifying forces are taking only what is useful to them about the quote unquote edginess of San Francisco and squeezing out all of the rest of the culture and the history.
Yeah. That is a huge tragedy. And, but I think that we can change it.
Yeah.
And I want to like have a glimmer of hope here.
How can we change it?
Make TV, get in there, make our shit.
Yeah.
Be in bands again.
Yeah. Hell
be
yeah.
in punk rock bands again. It's a great time to start a band. It's a great time to get your art onto the world. We were talking about these like creepy meetings with executives who are all cis males and all kind of like, oh, that, what a great idea. I've never heard that before. Like, you're really interesting.
But it's like, pass.
It's an eye roller, you know, because it's like, yeah, and okay, fine. So this is a no. Let's make our own shit. Yeah. Let's find a way.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of where I'm at.
It's and really like, reaching. You can really reach your audience. And you know, something that sex work taught me is that if you do what the fuck you want, mm-hmm. it might take you a little bit longer to build, and you may never build as big of an audience or a clientele as you would if you assimilated or conformed or mm-hmm. tried to like put on something that you're not. But the people that find you in your niche or whatever mm-hmm. are so happy they found you, and they're going to be 100 times as loyal.
Yeah.
And probably, and in my experience, also treat you with more respect than if you were not doing things that you didn't want to be doing because you thought that that's what you had to do.
Yeah. It's so strange. It's a fine line. I mean, it wasn't the guy who started Black Mirror just like a weirdo who did this like little weird thing and then it got picked up.
Yeah.
So, you know, anything's possible.
Yeah.
I have to believe that there's hope. Lizzie and Jane Starr and I are going to like make a modern feminist Western set in a strip club.
I'm so excited about that.
So the Lusty's exciting. We are taking it out and, you know, hopefully going to get it made very soon. And it's about characters, and it's about how in that time of loss, we bonded together and created our own family.
Yeah.
And there's a brilliant one moment in the film where when we kept getting fired and were desperate and babysitting each other's kids and trying to figure out shit, what do we do now? There's a lockout. One of our customers had this guy, Mudman, and he literally picked us up in a Jeep and drove us out in the middle of nowhere, like six of us.
Yes.
Remember?
Yeah.
And
he
wanted us to pose in the mud, covered in mud. And there's just something very creepy and like, you know, like fecal about it.
Yeah. Scatological. Yes.
There's
absolutely
something very like scatological about it. And so we were posing in these poses, these cheerleader poses sort of.
Yeah.
And he snaps a picture of us and it's like, that's our family photo.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah. And so that's like a really important moment in the film.
Cool.
Where like we all survive together and we put ourselves at risk, literally, figuratively.
Yeah.
Messily,
yeah,
muddily,
covered in shit, basically,
and with a stranger who could be a serial killer, but he is actually very sweet, like a basically kind of a submissive guy, and pays us and doesn't like leave us in the middle of nowhere or anything weird or creepy, doesn't kill us, like I'm really interested in stories where the sex worker doesn't die and end up in a garbage bag.
Yes, those are few and far between.
So I consulted on Jill Soloway's film Afternoon Delight.
Oh,
and worked with Catherine Hahn and Juno Temple on the development of the sex worker characters. And it was really important to Jill and I to like have this sex worker character be kind of a naive, sweet girl.
Yeah.
Who enjoyed her job and like went back to it.
You know, I feel like this could be a dangerous tangent, but my issue with that movie was, and it's, I actually didn't know that you consulted on it. So that's really, that's very interesting. I felt like it was sort of the like magical horror sort of archetype in the you know, like the magical Negro, right? Like the sex worker comes into this person's boring suburban life and gives it a spark and an edge and sexual excitement, but the story is foregrounding the like heteronormative person and not the sex worker.
I can see that. Actually, it's maybe worse than that.
Mm.
It's that they use her
in
order to throw a bomb in their heteronormative relationship.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Because maybe the main character doesn't super want to be there or she's really fucking bored.
Right.
So, yeah, she uses the sex worker who allows herself to be used because she's super young and she does things like that and ends up kind of, I think, living out of her car or something.
Yeah.
And they use her and she agrees to be used, because in life, everything is a negotiation.
Absolutely.
And then even like the darkness also goes further to where Catherine Hahn's character, Rachel, kind of falls in love with her a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and misleads her and then stabs her in the back.
Right.
So that's real.
Yeah.
That is actually very real.
Yeah.
And then, you know, McKenna is the character.
Oh, I think, okay.
The sex worker character.
Oh, right. Or
is it Mackenzie? I think it's McKenna. So she gets hurt by that and is uninvited to the party and so forth. And however, picks herself up and leaves.
Yeah.
So she's actually powerful and goes back to her safe place. So, I mean, that's another way to see it.
Totally. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. After being stabbed in the back by someone who like thought she was going to save her, which I think McKenna knew she wasn't going to be saved, nor did she want to or need to.
Yeah, she didn't need a white knight.
No. She went back to her happy place. I mean, the last scene is she's laughing outside the strip club with her coworkers.
Yeah, well, I mean, so
in that's that when sense, you last see her.
In that sense, maybe it's actually complicating that magical hooker trope or magical sex worker trope.
Yeah. Maybe.
The things I'm dreaming of from my station. A vacation. New locations.
Interrobang is produced and hosted by yours truly, Tina Horn. Our theme music is by my brother from another mother, Moot. Thanks for listening.
Rounding the planet, windows fill with light. My love has some fun every night.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.